Remember those snowy forests and talking animals from your childhood?
Yeah.
Today, we're pushing past the fur coats and Turkish delight
Right.
to uncover the surprising depth of C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. You've brought in a really interesting mix of sources this time.
I have.
Academic articles, teaching guides, even a film study. It makes me wonder, is this beloved book more than just a children's fantasy?
Well, it's fascinating how these sources, even those aimed at very different audiences, all seem to converge on certain key ideas.
Okay.
For example, the historical context of World War II casts a surprisingly long shadow over Narnia.
Okay, so we're not just talking about a battle between good and evil here, but potentially a reflection of real-world conflict.
Exactly. Both the academic paper and the Walden Media Guide, which was created for the film adaptation, highlight how C.S. Lewis's own experiences during wartime and the historical reality of the Blitz seep into the narrative.
Right.
Think about those scenes where the Pevensies are hiding in the countryside, seeking refuge from danger. The Educator's Guide directly connects that to the experience of children evacuated from London during the war. It adds a layer of depth and complexity to the story that I think many readers, especially young readers, might not pick up on initially.
That's a really good point. It's like Lewis is taking these very real anxieties of a generation.
Yeah.
The fear, the uncertainty,
yeah.
And transposing them onto this fantastical world.
Precisely. He's tapping into a shared experience, a collective memory almost, that allows the story to resonate on a much deeper level. But it's not just the overarching themes.
Okay.
Even specific characters like Mr. Tumnus seem to embody this sense of internal conflict that reflects the time period.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even Lewis's own description of Mr. Tumnus in the Walden Media Guide. He's described as whimsical, carrying parcels, almost like he's been Christmas shopping. But at the same time, there's this underlying tension. Knowing that he's bound to serve the White Witch, it creates this really interesting moral complexity in a character who could have easily been just a charming fawn.
And what's striking is how consistent this depiction of Mr. Tumnus is across the different sources you've provided.
Yep.
Whether it's an academic analysis or a guide for teachers, that duality, the pull between good and evil, between his desire to befriend Lucy and his loyalty to the White Witch, remains central to his character. It's almost as if his internal struggle mirrors the larger conflict playing out in Narnia itself.
That's so true. And speaking of internal struggles, we can't forget about Lucy and her own journey throughout the story.
Right.
This university essay you've included takes a fascinating psychological approach, arguing that Lucy's time in Narnia allows her to confront what it calls repressed desires. That sounds pretty intense for a children's book, right?
It might sound complex at first. But think of it this way. Have you ever wanted to do something brave, but hesitated because of fear or self-doubt?
Sure.
That's kind of what this essay is getting at. It suggests that Narnia becomes the safe space for Lucy to act on those impulses, those desires that she might repress in the real world. We see her transform from a shy girl who is a bit timid, even with the professor, to someone who shows incredible courage and even leads others.
Right. She goes from being a bit hesitant around the professor to instantly trusting Mr. Tumnus, a creature she just met in a magical world.
Exactly. It's like Narnia allows certain aspects of her personality to blossom, aspects that might have remained dormant in her everyday life. And it's not just about her bravery. Remember how she handles the guilt and shame after being tricked by the White Witch?
Oh, yeah.
In the real world, a child might dwell on that. But in Narnia, she's able to process those emotions, learn from her mistakes, and emerge even stronger. It speaks to the power of facing your inner demons, even if they're disguised as Turkish delight-wielding queens.
Okay, that's a fantastic point. It's like Narnia becomes this testing ground for Lucy's emotional growth in a way that wouldn't be possible in her everyday life.
Precisely. And that brings us to another layer of depth that several of these sources highlight, the Christian symbolism woven throughout the story.
Okay.
Now, even if you're not approaching this from a religious perspective,
right,
it's hard to ignore the archetypal figures that C.S. Lewis uses.
Especially Aslan. The Educator's Guide practically calls him a symbol for Christ. But even beyond that, I remember as a kid, both Aslan and Father Christmas had this almost mythical quality. Like they represented something ancient and powerful.
That's a great observation, and it actually connects to what this university essay calls immemorial comforters. These are figures like wise old men. Or powerful protectors that appear in stories across cultures and throughout history.
Right.
They embody our deepest desires for guidance, for hope, for someone to see us through difficult times.
So even if you don't see Aslan specifically as a Christ figure, he still taps into this universal need for something bigger than ourselves, something to believe in.
Exactly. And I love how you brought up Father Christmas. It's not just that he brings gifts. It's that his very presence weakens the White Witch's hold on Narnia.
Wow.
It's like this return of joy and generosity disrupts the oppressive, unending winter she has imposed.
That's such a cool detail. It's like Lewis is saying that even small acts of kindness, of celebration, can chip away at the darkness in the world. And speaking of chipping away at the darkness, we can't forget about Edmund and his journey. He starts out making some pretty questionable choices, to say the least.
He does seem to fall for the White Witch's manipulations quite easily. But, you know, that vulnerability, that temptation to take the easy way out, even when you know it's wrong, that's something we can all relate to, isn't it?
Yeah.
Edmund's story, despite his initial missteps, ultimately becomes a powerful example of redemption.
Absolutely. The Walden Media Guide actually points out how his betrayal and eventual change of heart were key plot points for the filmmakers. They recognized how crucial it was to show that even someone who makes mistakes, even someone who causes harm, can still choose to do the right thing.
And the fact that Aslan is willing to forgive him, to sacrifice himself for Edmund's sake, adds another layer to those Christian themes we were discussing. It's about grace, about second chances, about the idea that no one is beyond redemption.
That's a really powerful message, and it's something that I think resonates deeply with readers. Regardless of their religious beliefs, it really makes you think about the power of forgiveness, both giving it and receiving it. But stepping back for a moment, we've covered a lot of ground here. We started with what seemed like a simple children's story, and now we're uncovering all these layers of historical context, psychological depth, and even spiritual allegory.
And what's remarkable is that none of these interpretations feel out of place. They all coexist within the world that Lewis created, enriching the story and giving it a timeless quality.
Exactly. I mean, we've got World War II anxieties woven into talking animal diplomacy, and profound reflections on forgiveness playing out alongside magical battles. It's no wonder this book continues to resonate with readers of all ages.
You've really hit on something there. It's that ability to speak to something universal within us, regardless of our background or beliefs. That makes The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe so captivating. It's more than just an escape. It's a journey of self-discovery disguised as a children's adventure.
And that journey. The idea that we can step through a wardrobe and find ourselves in a whole new world? It makes you wonder, doesn't it? What if those magical doorways aren't limited to fiction? What if the real magic lies in our ability to look beyond the everyday, to tap into our own inner Narnia?
What a thought-provoking idea to end on. It reminds me of that line from the book, "Once a king in Narnia, always a king in Narnia." Perhaps it's a reminder that the courage, the wonder, the compassion we discover within ourselves, those qualities don't have to disappear when we close the book. They can stay with us, shaping the way we navigate our own world.
And maybe, just maybe, if we take close attention, we might even find a few talking animals along the way. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. It's clear that The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is much more than meets the eye, offering a timeless tale that continues to resonate with readers of all ages.